Hi, and welcome to the Friends Church Podcast. It's Jeff here, and I'm excited that you're willing to carve out some time to listen to one of our Sunday messages. You were part of a growing community of online listeners who are downloading our messages to support their spiritual journeys, to find ways to make a positive impact in their world, which is really exciting because that's exactly why we're providing this podcast. If you're finding value in what we're doing, I would like to ask you to join others within our tribe who financially support the work of Friends Church. Some view their support in a similar way that they see their monthly fitness club or boot camp dues, where they're paying 50 to 200 bucks a month. Others see it similar to their Apple Music or SoundCloud subscription, where they're paying 10 to 15 bucks a month. Amounts are personal to everyone, but every dollar donated will go into products like this. If you're willing, you can donate easily by visiting www.friendschurch.ca and clicking the red donate button. This will lead you to the Canada Helps portal that is used by many nonprofit organizations to process credit card payments. Just enter your information, including your donation amount, and click the General Fund tab. On behalf of Friends Church Tribe, welcome. We're glad you found us, and thank you. Now enjoy this week's message. Good morning, everyone. Glad you're here. I hope you're glad you're here. If you got dragged in, my apologies. Maybe you have a friend or a family member that wanted you to come out this morning. Or just, my name is Jeff. I'm one of the pastors here at Friends Church, and we're kicking off a new series this morning. A few years ago, I attended a funeral service for a family friend. That I was quite close to, and I was not looking forward to it. You know how funerals are to begin with. But this person meant a lot to me, and I remember as the funeral was getting closer, I knew there'd be a lot of people there, and I don't know, they're just that, you know, that ugly, sick feeling you get about going to something like that? And I got into that auditorium, and it was full. And I could tell I was emotional. I mean, I'm emotional at the best of times, right? But I'm just thinking, let's just get through this thing. But as the tributes were made and music played, as I watched pictures of his life, memories began flooding over me. And I'm telling you, I was a wreck. You ever felt that? And I'm just doing everything I can. I'm swallowing hard. And I mean, over the course of that hour and a half, man, I tell you, there were moments where I laughed so hard at some stories that were told. I mean, just belly laughed because I could see him doing some of the stuff that they talked about and knew, oh yeah, that's him. And then there's other times, man, I sobbed uncontrollably. Oh, it was just bad. We finished the ceremony. We went out to the reception, and of course you're hugging on necks. And I walked out of that funeral out in the parking lot, man, I was emotionally spent. Spent. Like my body and my mind, my heart, oh, just had been through the ringer. Have you been there? You know what that feels like? Just like, man, pour me a stiff drink right now. Just, and yet, I got into the car and I'm driving away and I'm going, that was healthy, what just happened? That there, somehow in all that just went down, he started healing my aching soul in some way. I knew it. There's something about the power of some rituals that can do amazing things inside of us. Isn't it true? Now, Having said that, I have been through other rituals in kind of more of a religious environment that has had the opposite effect on me. Maybe you know what I'm talking about there too. Whereas they're going through this religious liturgy and talking about all these different things, and simply I'm just like, shoot me now. Just painful. I'm like, I have zero connection to anything you're doing right now. And I'm just like, what time is it? What time is it? What time was it? When did this start again? How long do these things go? You ever had one of those?
Last Sunday, Jeff.
I don't know what you're thinking. Oh, I'm just sitting there going, oh, please stop this right now. Let me off the train. I need off. I've had those. Perhaps because of that, I can find myself every now and then looking at more structured religious ritual environments and the various rituals that people have traditionally engaged in, and I can find myself in my mind concluding that perhaps they're just a necessary evil. Perhaps it's just well, you know what? If you want to be a part of that community, if you want to kind of connect in that kind of religious environment, you just got to put up with that. It's a necessary evil. A waste of time. But, oh well. My question this morning is, do those rituals have to be that way? Does that have to be our response to those things? I want to talk about rituals this morning. A while ago, Vince came to me and he said he wanted to do a series on Leviticus. Now, Vince is trained, his post-secondary training is in theology, as Master of Divinity. He geeks out on interpretation of the Bible. Probably more than anything, he loves the most obscure passages that would make some of you totally, like, zonk out. And he goes, whoa, did you see this? Like, that's Vince. He loves this kind of stuff. And when he told me he wanted to talk about Leviticus in a series, my reaction was less than positive. I have a Bible that I've owned since I was about 12 years old. The pages of it are well worn. You can walk through that, and I'm telling you, you mention different passages, I can basically flip there and go, yep, and it's written through, but the pages of Leviticus, man, they look brand new. you look through those pages, you just think, man, Jeff, this is like, have you read this? And there's a reason for it. It's crazy. It's weird. Full of instructions about how to conduct all kinds of ancient Jewish rituals. If you've read through this, you know, it talks about these sacrificial offerings involving animals and grain offerings and peace offerings and sin offerings. It talks about clean and unclean animals, the purification rituals of women after childbirth. It explains rituals to deal with leprosy, the skin disease. Many of the pages in my Bible, I mean, I have traffic, but man, when I get there, I'm just like, okay, wow, I got nothing here. Like this is doing nothing for me. We don't do this stuff anymore. Flip, let's move on. Has anyone ever experienced that? Yeah, okay, so yeah, I'm not alone? All right. I think I may have told Vince something about rather watching paint dry. I can't remember about this Leviticus series. He said, no, I want to show you something. And so we sat down and he began to unpack some different things that I hadn't seen. I hadn't heard.
not only did I find them fascinating, but I found some of his findings incredibly relevant to our lives. And after he finished, I went, I'm sold. Let's go. So I'm excited today that we're going to begin a new series on Leviticus today. Never thought I'd say that with a smile. And normally I would have been apologizing to all of you for what we're about to go through. But I think actually over the next number of weeks, you're going to see what I saw. And you're going to go, wow, there is something amazing about this. This morning, rather than jumping into some of the actual rituals that it speaks of, I want to kind of talk to you about some of my findings. Some of the stuff that made me kind of go, whoa, I didn't know that, whoa. It changed my perspective and even just how I looked at this and ritual in general. Pieces of the ritual piece that I think our spiritual ancestors understood that we haven't necessarily, it hasn't been passed on really well to us. I'll speak for me. We may not use the word ritual very often. If I were to ask you what kind of rituals you engage in regularly, you might kind of look at me and go, yeah, I don't really do that. I'm not that kind of person. But I can guarantee you, likely you do. Whether you realize it or not, whether you could define even what that word is or not, you engage in them. If you've ever been to a funeral, you've engaged in a ritual. If you've ever sat through or been married, you've engaged in a ritual that likely was religious of some sort. Some of you, perhaps, especially with Catholic roots, might be right now engaged in some kind of Lent practice where you're engaging in some acts of self-discipline and denial leading up to Easter. Some of you have been baptized or have had your children baptized or are wanting to be baptized. Ritual. If you've been here for very long and you've engaged in communion at the front here, like we've done it, you've experienced ritual. You showing up this morning to just be here is ritual. This is a ritual. There are so many different forms of rituals that we observe in so many different ways, both traditionally and non-traditionally. You know, I'll be honest with you, knowing exactly what all the different rituals that have been held over the years have meant exactly and why they did them is tricky. As we've poured ourselves into different commentaries, different scholars from all kinds of different that are weighing in on what they thought some of the rituals of the Old Testament were really for. There are many different ideas. So being able to stand up here and say, they did this for this reason, please hear me right now. I would have to probably give you three or four different takes on that. And over this series, you're probably going to hear a number of different perspectives come out. But they're crazy, and I warned you about this, right? They are crazy, and I'm just going to give you a little taste of the craziness right now. Leviticus 4, let's just read this. The congregation must bring a bull as an absolution offering and present it at the tent of meeting. The elders in the congregation will lay their hands on the bull's head. We're talking a live bull. In the presence of God, it better be a tame bull, is what I'm thinking. In the presence of God, and one of them will slaughter it right there before God. The anointed priest will then bring some of the blood into the tent of meeting, dip his finger in the blood, sprinkle it, some of it seven times before God, in front of the curtain. He will smear some of the blood on the horns of the altar, which is before God in the tent of meeting, and pour the rest of the blood at the base of the altar of whole burnt offering at the entrance of the tent of meeting. He's then going to remove all the fat and burn it on the altar. They then will take the bull outside of the camp and burn it just as they burn the first bull. Crazy. I mean, you could get locked up for talking about doing this kind of stuff today, right? People go, whoa, you guys are a cult. You're talking about this stuff. I've talked to people who have no use for Christianity in the Bible because they quote verses like this and go, you guys are just into some strange expletives. I mean, whether it's stuff like this, where you look back to Abraham, who believes God told him to go and sacrifice his own son. I get that verse brought up to me again and again. You just go, wow, this is crazy. That's what you guys are about, hey? Question, why would God care about that kind of stuff? This stuff that I'm just reading, does he? Like, was God telling them to do this stuff? Man, that's when I've read over these prescriptive rituals over the years, I couldn't help but think, why did they think these rituals were, what did they think they were achieving with God? Like at some point, did God actually care about what they did with that blood? And the fact that they had to separate the fat, get that animal out of the camp and go and burn that thing. Like, was God going, yeah. But there is an important backstory that you won't read about in the Bible that undergirds some of this going on. The Bible isn't always very good by saying, kind of stepping off the scene, let me tell you what just happened here. It doesn't do that. You have to rely on the scholars who understood the history and the context behind this stuff. What's important to understand is that at the time that the biblical authors were writing the book of Exodus, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, the culture around them was dominated by this paganism. And probably one of the most prominent beliefs of that day in their culture was that there were gods, many, plural, and they were angry. When things went wrong, when disease broke out, when women couldn't bear children, when crops failed, when marriages broke apart, when there was fighting and war, when storms loomed large that were threatening to wipe them out, the common belief that it was due to some kind of demonic interference. That the gods were angry and demons were being sent out on assignment to take us out. That's why we are experiencing this hardship. This was one of the most predominant belief systems that surrounded their culture. The logic of the religious systems of that day was if you could keep the gods happy, if you could appease them somehow, then life would go well for you and you just might survive. What I found really interesting was, according to some scholars, you can actually see how these common, predominant pagan belief systems actually influenced the authors of stories in the early parts of the Bible. This was fascinating to me. If you just read the story of Cain and Abel, you can see it. It says Cain brought an offering to God. This was his means of appeasing God, right? He brought it from the produce of his farm. Abel, his brother, also brought an offering, but from the firstborn animals of his herd. So Abel's a rancher, Cain is a farmer. They bring kind of the spoils of their work before God. God liked Abel's offering, but Cain and his offering didn't get his approval. I mean, you sit there, just reading this story, you can sit there and just have this picture of God in your mind, can't you? Where he's kind of sitting there and going, see what you got. Go ahead, Abel, let's see what you brought here. Pretty nice. Cain? Huh? It's just like, oh, too bad, Cain. There is this idea that God is just sitting there looking for a reason to say, no, not good enough. There is this constant pressure, constant stress. Can we please the God? Can we make them happy so that things will go well? But somewhere along the way, some scholars suggest that there was a shift in the beliefs of Jewish people, the Jewish community who followed Yahweh, the God of the Bible. The Jewish community, something began to shift here. Where no longer were they convinced that the problems in their world were caused by some demonic entities of an angry God. Rather, they began to see their true enemy was themselves. It was humanity. that was wreaking havoc in their world. It was humanity that was ruining relationships. The warring, the fighting, the cheating, the stealing, the infidelity was not brought on by some kind of demonic interference. No. They were doing it to themselves. This is a massive shift that lies underneath, and you can see it build. They were doing it to themselves by their own selfish, short-sighted decisions they were making in their everyday lives. Another important shift happened subtly. It was in the way that they viewed God. The really important pieces here. God was no longer in their minds this angry entity that was wanting to punish him, that was waiting with the hammer to say, you screw this up, I'm going to pound you. I'm going to make you pay. Something shifted in there within the Jewish community where they went, no, wait a second. No, we don't think God is that way. Something shifted where their fear of him, this, oh, don't hurt us, changed. Where they actually wanted God to become close. They saw God as this life force to come and they wanted him to permeate every part of their community. They wanted him close. In fact, anything they could do to bring him here within their environment, they did everything they could. They weren't scared of him. They wanted him in their lives. They saw him as this beautiful thing, this life force that would change the feel of their world and their community. These are important pieces. But what could stop that from happening? They believed that their own actions actually had an ability to push God away. They wanted God to come in. He represented this life force they needed that would make their lives flourish. They're wanting, but they began to realize, whoa, no, it's us that are doing things to each other. And actually, in that process, we push God out of our world. We push him out of our community. And in fact, in doing that, we're choosing to push life out. And we're almost inviting death in. You see this even in the words of Moses. He would look at his people and he'd say, today you have an opportunity to choose what you're going to do. Choose life. Don't choose death. Choose today the right things. Do the right things. This was an action of life that ushered God in and brought him close. If we do the right things, God remains among us. We choose poorly, darkness begins to take over. God wasn't angry. God was good. God was life. Now you take that information that I just gave you, those two pieces. Gods aren't angry. No, maybe that's not what it's about. Maybe it's us that's creating the problems. And God is good. God is life. Let's bring him close. You take that those pieces of information, and then you undergird what's going on underneath when you start reading through Leviticus. And all of a sudden, things start to make a little more sense. And we're going to go into specifically some of the different pieces of Leviticus. But let me just say in advance, within the book of Leviticus, there is a focus on what to do with the blood. I mentioned that in this last passage. And the carcass of the animal. Blood, understanding now these pieces, blood was sacred. Blood represented life. To usher God in was to choose life. What you did with that blood was incredibly important. It was a statement of what you were choosing in the world. So when they would hold these sacrifices, it was very important what they did with that blood, because it was communicating that they were in fact choosing life. To waste blood, bad. That's why if you dive into the pages, you begin to realize no blood must ever be consumed. It must actually be drained fully. Then what they did with it, and you, as I read through that passage, what they would do, and they would hold it back, and they would smear it, and they would offer up in this ritual, the sense of, God, we acknowledge life. We take care of this blood. They talk about that carcass. We got to get it out of the camp. Why? The carcass, a dead carcass, represented death. We got to get it out because we're not about death. We want nothing to do with anything that looks like death. Out of the camp now. They talk about genital discharge. This was fascinating to me because I'm going, ugh. Every time they get into it, I'm just like, ugh. At that time, scholars think science-wise, they thought that men's male semen was actually the same as female's menstrual discharge. They thought somehow these two things are connected to life. That was their understanding, it seems. So what happened with those two things was incredibly important. Rituals set up around that. Why? What you do with that to just let it just fall around and just die? Bad. Bad. That was wasting. That was death. We got to deal with this in a way that acknowledges the life that's there. Whoa. Interesting. All this stuff about leprosy. They had many different diseases going on in the camp at that time. Why leprosy? This is interesting commentary within the scholars. They're going, why do they just pick out this one disease? They could have talked about, they could have rituals for all these different kinds. You know what scholars think? Scholars think that because leprosy had a way of turning your skin white, in fact, turning you in, looked like a zombie. You looked dead. They wanted nothing to do with anything that looked dead. If you are looking dead, you're out. We got to get you out of the camp because we are about life, the sacredness of life. As I'm listening and I'm reading, I'm going, wow, really? That is fascinating. Now all of a sudden I'm reading through some of these passages and I'm going, okay, I get what's underneath this. They are about life. And doing things that will create life. Now that explains a lot of the zaniness of some of the stuff that you'll read in Leviticus. But still, the question I was searching through was, why though the rituals? Why must you do these rituals? I mean, if there were no longer some kind of magic ceremony to appease God, if that wasn't it, if no longer what they were doing had really necessarily any effect on whether God loved them more or not, was angry with them or not, then why are you even doing them now? What were they for? Let me ask you something. Have you ever had someone you love dearly tell you that you'd done something to them that really hurt them? They just kind of looked you in the eyes and said, what you did there really hurt. I remember the day when Kathy, my wife, looked me in the eye and she said, Jeff, you have a way, a tone that you use, and I rarely ever hear it outside of the home. But you use it with me and you use it with your boys. And when you get into that sarcastic, angry tone, it cuts me like a knife. And I remember her at that time being mystified. I'm looking at her going, what? I said, well, I don't know what you're talking about, honestly. I said, if that's what I do, I want to stop that because I don't want to do that. But you got to point that out when I'm doing it. So anyways, obviously, she points it out one day. And she's going right there. I just did that. I said that. She said, the way you just said that. I went, Okay. I'm sorry. Okay. I was angry there, and I said, okay. I said, all right, I'm not going to do that again. And then she pointed out again. And then again. I remember the day I was in the garage, and I'm in a hurry. I got to go somewhere. I get into the car and I'm looking and my keys aren't there. We always leave the keys in the vehicles in the garage. And I'm in a hurry. I come running back into the house. Guy says, what's the matter? I said, I'm already burning hot, right? Where are the keys? So I'm looking around. Kathy jumps up to start looking for them. And she asks the wrong question. She says, well, where did you put them last? And instantly, I get into the zone. If I knew where I put... And it wasn't the worst blowout. It was just the string of time and time and time and time again where she's going that tone. And I said it in a way like, see her look at me. And she's just like, and she turned. And you know when you get that look and it's like, oh, no. Of course, she finds the keys, like feels like 2 seconds later, next to my stuff. And I'm just like, oh. And I go to take the keys and I'm trying to look her in the eye. She doesn't want to look at me. You know those moments when sorry just doesn't cut it anymore? When they look at you and go, no, I can't do that one more time. Because there is something here that just keeps going and going. And I just keep getting cut and cut. And when you say sorry, you don't mean sorry. She didn't have to say much, but that's what was screaming at me, and I knew it. And I'm just sitting there going, ah. And in that moment, I almost felt like I need something to do. I need to do something here to up the ante. I need to have some kind of serious consequence that would say, if you do that again, Jarvis, you're going to pay here because you're killing her. You know what I mean? You are killing her. You're beating on your kids, and you can say sorry all you like, but that thing is taking this thing down. This concept that I'm just describing right now, as I'm pouring through these rituals, I think lies at the heart of some of these rituals that they were doing. It seems that some of these rituals that we're going to study over the next served as a reminder of something bad that had gone down, that had brought death into the camp. A little flippant sorry wasn't enough. Because those little sorries, oh man, I'm sorry about that. You okay there? All right. Wipe, no. And the pattern continues. And the death stays. And the relationship starts to chip away. And the resentment begins to grow. and the anger burns under the surface. If I and my studying, and as we're unpacking this, if we've looked at it from any part of an accurate lens, many of these religious rituals were meant to act like a full stop, a timeout. It says, whoa, 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 whoa. Let's not move forward, but let's look back at something that happened back there that can't go on anymore. Now, I've only told you half of this equation through that illustration. And that is the half that speaks to that which goes wrong. In fact, we see religious rituals in the book of Exodus doing one of two things, doing exactly that, where it's soberly and painfully being reminded of actions that brought death, but also stopping and turning around and going, something really good is going on right here. We are seeing life right here. And before we just take it for granted, we are stopping. And we're going to turn around. We're going to celebrate something that ushered life in. You know, it makes me wonder how many rituals that have been practiced over the years in our culture or in other cultures, perhaps at one time had such power. When they engaged them, everyone in the room would have known exactly what this thing was designed to do. I think back to those early days in ancient Israel when they would perform one of these rituals and the incredible level of heightened awareness in the room for every person looking, knowing the bad thing that had gone down. The heightened awareness in the sense of, no, we're not about that. We're about life. And everyone in that room going, oh man, I don't want to be a part of something like that. And that sense of sobriety that happens as people look back and reflect on some hurt, some damage that was caused, going, oh, no, I'm going to be very careful. I'm going to be very careful this week. Or when they would come together and they begin to throw a celebration and say, look at the amazing thing, at these relationships that we have going on here. Look at the way that we've been delivered from some of that stuff and that stuff that's gone on in the past that has taken down other people. Look at how we're doing. Look at the life. Look at the smiles. Look at this. And they would throw this party and the ritual would take off and people would come out of there going, yes. But over time, the ritual starts dying, losing steam. If we were fast forward to today, I sometimes wonder how much of the rituals that once held such incredible power to be able to grip us, make us think. I think in my own life, I grew up saying a prayer, grace, at the meal times. Anyone else doing that? My parents would, we weren't allowed to eat until we prayed. And we'd sit and pray. Man, I remember as I was growing up, I kept on thinking, so like when we pray, does that just like keep us from being poisoned? Like, oh, did you bless the meal? No. Ooh, you didn't take a bite yet, did you? Ooh, weird things play in the kid's head as they grow up. You go, what's the point of this? And you know, as a parent, I moved away from that. I said, that's baloney. But every now and then I'll be at a function. Maybe I'll be even with another person. I was with one guy the other day for breakfast. And the meal came. And he took his coffee mug. And he lifted it up. And I'm looking at him. And I thought he'd say cheers, but he didn't. He said, here's to the giver. And we clinked glasses. And I said, that's different. I said, what does that mean to you? And he said this, and he started going into how this moment as we sit down, he said, it's a moment for me to be able to just acknowledge in my life where I am and who I am, what I'm tied into, a bigger picture, something deeper, the author of life. I just went, oh, wow. There was a time when I grew skeptical of even coming to church. Because I think at some point it just became an obligation. Something you had to do. And as we got going in this Friends Church thing, and we had many people disillusioned with church, they're going, why even bother? Why even bother? I can learn on my own. I can do this thing. More and more, start thinking about this ritual as an opportunity to take a time out, stop, full stop, and say, why? What am I about? What am I doing with my life? What is my life going to be given to? And an opportunity to just stop and say, today, I'm realigning. Communion. At one point, man, I remember as a kid getting the communion wafers and whatever and kind of going around grabbing all the communion cups left over. You know, it's weird. Ceremonies in my tradition that have lost meaning over the years. In the theological jargon, oh, this means this means that. And for me, there's been power as I take as a ceremony like communion and just say, no. This is a call for me. This is a call back. It's like Jesus sitting there saying, I want you to remember everything I've talked to you about, Jeff. You signed up for this spiritual journey. You want to live like me. Remember the things I've done and look back over this last week. Have you gotten a little off kilter? How have your choices been making? Have you been choosing life this week, Jeff? Or have you made some choices this week that have brought death into your camp? Communion now is resurrected in my heart, in my soul, where it's just like this realignment is pointing me to true north again. Say, no, God, I want to choose life this week. And yeah, I got a little off track. I used that tone a couple times last week. I gotta make some better choices this week. If ritual could be inserted into our lives in meaningful ways that created the clean stop. And say, whoo, whoo, hey. Can you imagine? All of a sudden, ritual no longer becomes a bad word for me. In fact, if I look into many of the different religious rituals that we see in various different traditions that we've grown up with, power lies within, if we look at what they're about. Over the next number of weeks, we're going to take one ritual at a time, and we're going to look at the theme that comes underneath it. I'm telling you, some gold there, my friends, some gold. I'm going to invite you to think hard about your rituals. What rituals do you engage in? What do you do on a weekly basis? Do you do anything that creates those moments to stop? Draw your attention in who you are, what you're doing, why you're doing it. May I invite you to think hard about things that will cause you to give attention to what you're choosing. Choosing life or death. Oh man, I get revved up just even thinking. I was at a wedding the other day and guy says, I like to think that this wedding ceremony isn't for even for these two, even though it is. It's for every one of you that are in a serious relationship right now. This is your opportunity to look into that person, have a full stop and say, I am determining today, even as I'm watching them, even as I'm cheering them on, I am determining today, I am going to up my game. Stuff I've been doing wrong here, I'm going to make right. I'm renewing my vow right now. Oh, I want... There's gold, there. Hey, anniversaries, what could they do? Thanksgiving, what could it do? Oh, man, rituals all over the place that can be opportunities to choose life. Would you do that this week? Would you evaluate your rituals in your life? Take seriously even why you're doing this morning. Don't let this become a robotic action. You just say, oh, yeah, well, I'm seeing so-and-so here. No. Make this an opportunity to allow something inside to go, a realignment. God, today I surrender myself to some of these rituals that will cause my attention to turn to you, that will bring renewed sense of purpose and meaning, renewed vigilance, intentionality on the journey. I want to choose life. Amen. Amen. Hey, have a great week this week, will you? The blood stuff and whatever, let's keep that on the down low with the friends outside the church. All right? Have a great week. We'll see you next week.